These munitions were left in this war zone and have been buried over time. Some failed to explode after firing, and some were prepared to be fired, but were left behind when the forces had to advance or retreat in a hurry. Their sensitivity has changed over time, and the original standards can't be relied on during the clearance process. These types of ordnance can be moved around with every flood. The composition of the soil in some parts of Khuzestan province is such that surface runoff water doesn't seep into the ground very easily. This means that some contaminated areas become inaccessible due to flooding. The area of the contaminated region changes with the rise and fall of water levels. These regions cannot be used under any circumstances and even pose a threat to safe zones nearby. Until recently, this region was underwater, and the demining squad has only just been able to access it. Another difficulty of the demining process is the effect that time and changes in climate have on the landmines and ordnance. They might not be triggerable anymore, or they might have become more sensitive. An anti-tank mine might have become as sensitive as an anti-personnel mine. Any problem becomes more difficult to solve when a clear assessment of the matter can't be made. In the case of landmines and unexploded munitions, these changes are literally a matter of life and death. Demining areas with such diverse geographies and climates is a difficult, exhausting, and time-consuming task. We need highly skilled and effective forces with specialist training to rid the world of unexploded ordnance and make it safe for civilians again. It goes without saying that these forces also need advanced tools and a huge budget. Halime was only 10 years old when, on her way back from school, she stepped on a mine carried to her village by the river. Khatun was 7 when she stepped on a mine while playing with her friends in the village. That area had previously been demined. Fardin was busy working in the field when he came across a plastic object. He picked it up out of curiosity, and the mine exploded in his hands. Both his hands were amputated at the wrists. He completely lost one of his eyes, and the other eye can only barely make out the light. These victims were all born after the war, but they have fallen victim to its heritage. Arbab was part of a demining squad, but was maimed while trying to defuse a mine that had become extra sensitive as a result of the passage of time. The victims of mine explosions and their families need immediate medical attention and financial support after the accident. They won't be able to carry on living normal lives anymore. For instance, a child who has lost a limb needs new prosthetics as he or she grows older, as well as constant physiotherapy and psychotherapy. Halima is now receiving medical care and financial support, but nothing can make her forget the pain she has suffered. Khatun is determined to do what she loves, despite her physical and mental scars. Fardeen is going through the different steps of his treatment and is glad that his remaining eye is getting better after several operations. Arbab was lucky the protective gear he was wearing saved his life, but he can't participate in the demining operation anymore and will be supported by the mentioned network instead. Landmines have been much crueler to the children of the Deh Gorji village, though. The children discovered a Valmara bouncing fragmentation mine while out playing. This type of mine detonates in two stages. The first explosion launches it about 40 to 50 centimeters off the ground, where the main charge detonates, projecting more than 1,000 fragmentations in all directions, and killing or wounding everyone within an effectable radius. 5 children were killed. For a child, the difference between knowing how to act when faced with a landmine or unexploded ordnance and not knowing how dangerous they are is literally life or death. Children are the age group most hurt by these munitions. That's why the more the number of civilians educated about them, the less the casualties. Demining operations must be supplemented with civilian education, which has a real effect on reducing deaths and the loss of limbs. The geographical dispersion, the varying lifestyles and ages of the people at risk from landmines, makes educating them a big challenge. Not to mention that most of these people are villagers, shepherds, and nomads. Some of them are even travelers who just pass through these areas. The places those people need to be educated have a larger combined area than the regions that require demining. The educational materials and methods need to be adapted to the different ages and different sections of society. The Mine Action Center is responsible for the policy making, planning, and assessing the effectiveness of the education. Accordingly, the center focuses on prioritizing the different regions in need of education and producing and adapting the educational materials to match the type of threat and the target audience. The educational materials are produced in the form of documentaries, stories, or even animations in different local languages and provided to educators. Brochures, books, and pictures are also used in some areas. Thank you. offering educational programs in addition to demining operations, has resulted in an estimated 90% drop in the number of casualties compared to previous years. The demining process in Iran has one major difference with the rest of the world, and that is the limitations caused by the unjust, politically motivated sanctions, which prevent any country or international organization from collaborating with the Islamic Republic. A look at the statistics reveals that Iran hasn't received any financial aid for its humanitarian demining activities. In addition, Iran isn't given access to advanced equipment. It is even banned from using the IMSMA, the Information Management System for Mine Action, which registers information regarding the detection and clearance of mines. Put simply, Iran is barred from receiving any equipment or financial and scientific aid. Why? Because Iran is sanctioned, and therefore its demining operations are also sanctioned. After the war, the lands all along the border was unusable due to contamination. Every day, life and business in these areas were facing total destruction. More important, however, was the damage done to the public's mental sense of security. This map shows the regions of Iran's five border provinces contaminated with landmines and unexploded ordnance after the end of the war. This map shows the state of those regions after 30 years of demining. Despite all the sanctions and limitations, published statistics reveal that the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center boasts the highest number of discovered mines in 2019.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is no stranger to the work we do, and Excellency, your country has consistently supported the efforts of the General Assembly in the elaboration of resolutions on assistance in mine action and other very important disarmament resolutions.
They might have been able to impose great limitations on Iran's humanitarian demining activities through their sanctions. But nevertheless, the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center still outperforms all other countries when it comes to mine clearance, thanks to its achievements and wealth of experience.
And I think also the mix of the countries and the participants in this particular roundtable was just excellent. I mean, I must congratulate the Iranian, the IRMAC, for having done such a good choice. I can also say that, you know, we all know that Iran plays a very particular and important role in this region. And it is clear that in the future there is a very good prospect to have a stronger interaction for all of you with the Islamic Republic of Iran with regard to humanitarian demining and maybe also in other aspects.
Opening the doors of the Iranian Mine Action Center, which is an institution under the Ministry of Defense, and which shows also the openness and readiness of the Islamic Republic of Iran to share and learn from partner countries. So this these would be my improvised last words today.
This is the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center's International Education Building, a center for the exchange of experience, support of research and scientific activities, and improving the knowledge and skill of mine clearance squads. This education center represents the peak of the Mine Action Center's abilities and the essence of its scientific advancements. Research projects regarding novel ways of clearing mines are always of high priority at this center. This complex isn't restricted to just Iranian squads, and students from other countries are allowed to attend the programs held here. This center strives to expand humanitarian demining efforts and help improve the mine clearance capabilities of other countries. Iran's increasing knowledge of demining has led international institutions and other countries struggling with the clearance of unexploded munitions to request to collaborate with Iran. Khuzestan Province, Darkhobain. This region had been underwater for the past years, and as the water subsided, an unbelievable scene began to emerge. Thousands of unexploded ordnance, left over from the war, were sticking out of the ground, which couldn't be seen before. Although the area had been previously cleared, this deadly munition field had expanded the contaminated area once again. Iranian lands contaminated with mines and unexploded ordnance were cut from 4,200,000 hectares to around 100,000 hectares through 30 years of demining operations. Clearing the remaining area, however, is proving more difficult than all the previous areas that had been cleared combined. This is because these lands have very special characteristics. At least 50,000 hectares are flooded, making the job similar to finding a needle in a haystack. These regions need to be demined regardless, because they can contaminate nearby safe zones and are a threat to the lives of those living there. The more advanced the weapons became, the more people died after the wars ended. As soon as one war ended, another would begin, and so the weapons never stopped firing. One thing all those wars had in common was the unexploded munitions and mines they left behind. Very little attention is paid to the deaths caused by unexploded munitions, because they happen after the war is over, and because everybody thinks the war is not going to claim any more lives now that it's over.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Soleiman Ayesh, aged 20, was killed during a recent military raid by the Zionist regime forces on Arabat Jabbar camp in the West Bank. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to the website of the Middle East Eye, the Zionist regime's forces killed a Palestinian and wounded three others in a raid in the occupied West Bank recently. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the dead person as Soleiman Ayesh, 20. The Zionist regime forces stormed the Arabat Jabbar camp near Ariha in what the army called a counter-terrorism operation and arrested a wanted suspect. The Palestinian Prisoners Club said Ibrahim Habash and Hossam Faraj were detained in the raid. The Zionist regime's military also said two suspects were seen fleeing the scene, to which Israeli regime troops responded with live fire. The Zionist regime troops also fired shots, sound bombs, and tear gas towards camp residents. The governor of Ariha and the Jordan Valley, Jihad Abu Asal, said that the Zionist regime military is detaining Ayesh's body, in line with a common practice of withholding the bodies of Palestinians killed during army raids or attacks against Israelis. Eyewitnesses said that the Zionist regime forces stormed the Arabat Jabbar camp and took positions on the roofs of some of houses. They also searched and tampered with the contents of dozens of homes, subjecting the residents to failed investigations after detaining them for hours. The Zionist regime army also erected military checkpoints and closed all entrances to Ariha for the third day in a row, hindering the movement of Palestinians. This incident increases the total number of Palestinians killed by Israeli regime forces and Zionist settlers since the beginning of this year, 2023, to 99, including 16 children, with 6 deaths since the beginning of April. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency reported the Israeli regime killing of two Palestinians in Al-Quds and Arabat Jabbar refugee camp in Ariha were highlighted on the front page of three Palestinian Arabic dailies published recently. They said one was from the East Al-Quds neighborhood of Beit Safafa and was shot dead following car ramming incident, while the other was shot and killed in Arabat Jabbar refugee camp following an Israeli army raid of the camp. Al-Hayat Al-Jadida Daily said the army continues to suffocate the ancient city of Ariha with checkpoints all around it, causing long lines of cars and waiting to cross them. It also said there were injuries in army assaults on villages and towns in the occupied West Bank. Al-Quds Daily said Israeli regime occupation forces stormed Babu Rahma prayer area in Al-Aqsa Mosque in Al-Quds, desecrated and ransacked it. It said the Israelis also prevented the call for the evening prayer from Al-Aqsa Mosque recently under the pretext the call was disturbing Jews praying at the Western Wall. It also said the Zionist regime has imposed total closure on the West Bank and Gaza Strip for the next 2 days as it celebrates its creation and heightened army deployment along its borders. The Third Daily, Ayam, quoted Peace Now Movement saying that the Israeli occupation authorities are going to start next month building a circle road east of occupied Al-Quds. It said the Zionist regime asked the High Court to reject a plea by settlers calling for the removal of Khan al-Ahmar community east of Al-Quds, saying the decision to evacuate the community should come from the regime. It also said that the Palestinian Foreign Ministry is working on evacuating Palestinians from the war-torn Sudan, and that while foreigners in Sudan are being evacuated, the Zionist regime has proposed to host in occupied territories the two warring Sudanese generals for mediation talks. Al-Yawm Daily also said that the Israeli regime foreign minister called for prosecuting the Jordanian parliamentarian held on charges of attempting to smuggle weapons, while Al-Quds Daily said the Jordanian ambassador in the occupied territories visited the lawmaker. Al-Hayat Al-Jadida said the blind detainee in occupied territories, Azzeddin Amarna, started a hunger strike in protest against his administrative detention. Wafa News Agency also reported that a Palestinian man from Al-Quds town of Beit Safafa was fatally shot by an Israeli settler gunfire in the occupied city of Al-Quds following runover attack. The man, a father of five who was identified as Hatem Asad Abu Nejme, was shot dead by an Israeli settler after he allegedly carried out a runover attack that resulted in the injury of 8 Israelis. Israeli reports claim that the slain Palestinian suffered from mental problems and used to receive treatment inside the occupied territories. Arab 48 website reported on an Israeli report which alleged that a vehicle slammed into pedestrians, causing varying injuries to 8 Israelis, and that the perpetrator was neutralized. The Zionist regime forces detained the wife of the slain Palestinian shortly after.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad. Please stay tuned.
Thank you.
تنها چیزی که درباره پیغمبر
The greatest attribute of Prophet Muhammad mentioned in the Holy Quran is his good behavior. In Ayah 4 of Surah Al-Qalam we read, And indeed, you possess a great character. This ayah means that Prophet Muhammad had mastery over his great behavior and was as nice as possible in his interactions with others. The Prophet of Islam conquered the world with his good behavior. He had a great character, and his good behavior made him popular among all the people in the world. Now, we as Muslims must benefit from the good moral life of Prophet Muhammad. We can at least act in similar ways to him. A faithful Muslim is the one who behaves nicely in his family and society. Without good behavior, we can't be called a complete Muslim. Good behavior is the key to complete religion. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashim Nejad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The U.S. banking crisis is not over, and there will be repercussions for years to come. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon wrote in a letter to shareholders that was released recently, noting that recent events are nothing like what occurred during the global financial crisis in 2008 caused by consumer mortgages. Dimon said the current crisis involves fewer financial players and fewer issues that need to be resolved. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Reuters, the U.S. banking crisis is ongoing and its impact will be felt for years. J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. CEO Jamie Dimon wrote in a letter to shareholders recently. Dimon wrote in a 43-page annual message covering a range of topics from J.P. Morgan's performance to geopolitics and regulation, "The current crisis is not yet over, and even when it is behind us, there will be repercussions from it for years to come. Storm clouds are still threatening the economy as they did a year ago," said Dimon, chief executive of the largest U.S. lender. "And the banking system is under renewed stress after the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and Credit Suisse's rescue by UBS last month." Dimon wrote, "The market's odds of a recession have increased. And while this is nothing like 2008, it is not clear when this current crisis will end. It has provoked lots of jitters in the market and will clearly cause some tightening of financial conditions as banks and other lenders become more conservative. Even so, it is unclear whether the disruptions will slow the consumer spending that drives the U.S. economy," Dimon wrote. "Risks that led to the current crisis were hiding in plain sight," Dimon wrote, citing the interest rate exposure and level of uninsured deposits at Silicon Valley Bank. But he downplayed similarities to the global financial crisis. "While the 2008 crash hit large banks, mortgage lenders, and insurers with global interconnections, this current banking crisis involves far fewer financial players and fewer issues that need to be resolved," Dimon claimed. After taking the helm of J.P. Morgan in 2006, Dimon presided over the bank's crisis-era acquisitions of troubled investment bank Bear Stearns and Washington Mutual, the savings and loan whose failure was the largest in the United States history. Meanwhile, RT noted the turmoil in the financial industry caused by the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank SVB is not over yet and will be felt for years. The banker said in his annual letter to shareholders that this turn of events has significantly changed the market's expectations. Bond prices have recovered dramatically and the stock market is down, and the market's odds of a recession have increased. While noting that recent events are nothing like what occurred during the 2008 global financial crisis, he warned that the current crisis is not yet over. "The recent crisis has provoked lots of jitters in the market and will clearly cause some tightening of financial conditions as banks and other lenders become more conservative. In early March, massive deposits runs caused SVB and Signature Bank to fail within days. A third lender, First Republic, ended up being the recipient of a $30 billion rescue from top Wall Street banks, including J.P. Morgan, in the form of deposits. The big lenders stepped in amid investor fears that First Republic could become the next U.S. bank to fail. The contagion then spread to Europe, where Credit Suisse soon found itself in trouble and was ultimately taken over by rival UBS in a rushed deal brokered by the country's central bank. According to Dimon, the stress on regional banks has led investors and analysts to suggest that the too big to fail banks would be beneficiaries of the crisis. He said that J.P. Morgan wants to strengthen the smaller banks for the benefit of the whole financial system. Dimon wrote, "Any crisis that damages Americans' trust in their banks damages all banks, a fact that was known even before this crisis. While it is true that this bank crisis benefited larger banks to inflow of deposits they received from smaller institutions, the notion that this meltdown was good for them in any way is absurd." He called for more regulation in the financial sector, claiming that policymakers should be more wary of potentially pushing some financial services to non-banks and so-called shadow banks. Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden has claimed recently that the American banking sector is not going to explode, adding that the country still needed some time to resolve the present difficulties at financial institutions. Biden claimed U.S. lenders were in relatively good shape, with the government throwing all its effort into containing the fallout from the recent string of bank failures. He admitted that some time would be needed for the situation to stabilize, but denied the rescue of Credit Suisse by fellow European giant UBS was a credit consequence of events in the U.S. "I think we've done a pretty damn good job. People's savings are secure," Biden claimed. Earlier this month, regulators shuttered Silicon Valley Bank, the country's 16th biggest lender, in what would become the U.S. largest bank failure since 2008 financial crisis, and the second largest bank failure in the United States history. The third largest came just days later when Signature Bank ceased operations. The U.S. Federal Reserve has meanwhile announced a new bank term funding program that will offer loans of up to a year to shore up confidence in the banking system and protect depositors at failing banks. Under the new scheme, both insured and uninsured depositors will get full access to their money through a special fund of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. The regulator has also eased the terms of banks' access to its discount window. According to Biden, in the event other American lenders fail, federal deposit insurance could be topped for deposits above $250,000. Biden claimed, "If we find that there is more instability than appears, we'd be in a position to have the FDIC use the power it has to guarantee those loans above $250,000 like they did already."
Hidden Files.
Around 2 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, November 28, 1953, something rather strange happened at a New York City hotel. A scientist got up in the middle of the night, ran across a dark room, avoiding two beds, and dove through a closed window with the shades and curtains down, then died soon after he hit the ground. His name was Frank Olson, and his death would help uncover a series of secret CIA operations involving the lives of thousands. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today's mind-blowing topic is a CIA mind control project called MKUltra. The story of MKUltra is at times so surreal that one may think it's the plot of a science fiction movie, but unfortunately, it is very much true and affected thousands of people around the world, although no one is sure of the actual numbers because of the secrecy of the program. It was a Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, top secret program, which used humans as guinea pigs to test a range of drugs that could force confessions or brainwash individuals through various forms of psychological torture. Well, you see, in the 1950s, the CIA initiated this program to experiment with forms of mind control in order to, and I quote, to catch up with the Soviets and Chinese advances in the field. 80 institutions and 185 private researchers had contracts with the CIA to perform this work, and they were located around the world, as were their victims. So Sidney Gottlieb was the CIA's main man handling this project. He was a chemist, and some of his experiments were covertly funded at universities and research centers. Others were conducted in American prisons and in detention centers in Japan, Germany, and the Philippines. Now, according to journalist Stephen Kenzer, Gottlieb wanted to create a way to seize control of people's minds, and he realized that it was a two-part process. Well, first, you had to blast away, imagine that, blast away the existing mind. Second, you had to find a way to insert a new mind into that resulting void. Well, according to Kenzer, the United States didn't get too far on number two, but they did a lot of work on number one. There were a core group of scientists around the world who were part of MKUltra. LSD, sleep deprivation, and electric shock treatments were their favorite tools to use on their victims, but it was not limited to those. They would induce people into a high with putting them into having hallucinations, then giving them a drug to bring them down. And while in between these phases, some of them would give their victims many electric shock treatments, basically having people lose their minds. Take a look at this.
This is where I have my effect, in the mind.
This is lysergic acid diethylamide, better known as acid. The powerful drug was first synthesized in 1938 in Switzerland. With a dose of mere micrograms, the mind becomes confused. Perception is distorted. Personal identity is called into question. The results can be euphoric bliss or deadly panic.
So that was how LSD was introduced to this country.
Operation Midnight Climax is part of a larger top-secret CIA program called MKUltra. The goal: learn how to control and even reprogram people's minds. The CIA believes LSD might hold the key. Over the next 10 years, the agency doses a cross-section of the American public. Everyone from unwitting housewives to soldiers to even criminals like gangster Whitey Bulger is tested.
You know, what the CIA really dreamed of was sort of like a drug you could give to someone, get them to commit all sorts of unspeakable acts, and they wake up the next day and they don't remember what they've done.
They were looking into brainwashing. They were looking into mind control. They were looking into how they could create what they called Manchurian candidates. They were trying to figure out if they could get people to go out and do things that they would ordinarily not do, like assassinations.
The case of MKUltra has to be one of the craziest cases of blowback in CIA history. Because here they took this drug, LSD, and thought that they were going to be able to use it to control people's minds. And the unbelievable irony is that LSD is a drug that does exactly the opposite. It frees your mind and causes people to question authority.
Turn on, tune in, drop out.
The CIA's attempt to control people turned out to be just the opposite. It created the counterculture, as we know it, of the 60s. It was the CIA that introduced LSD to the United States.
So not only was the goal of this program brainwashing, but also reprogramming to get the victim to do anything the CIA wanted, even assassinations, and without the victim having the slightest memory of what he had done. The United States was concerned during the Korean War, where many American prisoners of war were confessing to the Koreans that they had actually used germ warfare on their country and were apologetic. Over 7,000 POWs petitioned the U.S. to end the war, and 21 of the soldiers even refused to return to the United States after the war. Well, Washington thought all of this was because of brainwashing techniques, which they thought had been used on the soldiers, but that was not the case. However, it did not prevent the U.S. from starting this aggressive and inhumane program to learn how to control humans by brainwashing them. Officially, the MKUltra program ended when information started seeping out after Olson's case was finally looked into. You know, he was the guy I introduced to you at the beginning of the program, the scientist who was set up to look like he committed suicide, but were most likely killed by the same CIA that he had worked for. It seemed that after he was given an LSD dosage that he had a bit of a conscience and couldn't take the torture to others any longer. And Gottlieb and others, even higher up, knew that he needed to be silenced before he exposed what they were doing. Much about this program came to light 20 years after Olson's death, and because of the public exposure, the program was officially ended. However, there are those who say it never really ended, but just took on other forms. Let's get my guests involved in this discussion.
James Martinez is a media ecologist, radio talk show host, and pioneer in radio broadcasting and behavior modification. Born in San Diego, California, he's an accredited member of the Press for American Media Distribution. Martinez has been a consultant for True TV's Conspiracy Theory and has consulted for Emmy Award-winning actor Ian Bailey for a show entitled Imagine This.
Well, thank you so much, James, for being with us. I'd like to start off with this. How would you describe MKUltra to our audience?
MKUltra was brought over from Europe during World War II, where they're perfecting behavior modification using child abuse and satanic cult ritual. Those were the melting pots for what was to be used. Originally, most people think MKUltra had to do with being able to utilize behavioral software to override the conscious mind of an individual that was pre-programmed for instance, assassination. But it wasn't only for assassination. It was used for political purposes as well. And it was done through ritualistic abuse originally. That's how it started. These ritual abusive techniques were used to create deep-seated trauma within the psyche, and then around the trauma, build and program personalities for certain functions to be used. MKUltra, originally, what people know it from is being able to take the free will of an individual, any individual, and get them to commit murder without them knowing it or even remembering it, and carrying it out skillfully and discreetly so that it can be utilized for political purposes, for altering the chessboard pieces on the grand chessboard, so to speak. That's what it was for originally, but it has far more profound effects today.
I mean, that's really mind-boggling what you said. How successful would you say that program was?
Very successful. Very successful. In 1990, when I was working with Walter Boert, we had and interviewed hundreds of people that survived ritualistic satanic abuse. Some were in the private sector, some were in the military, and some were utilized in Vietnam for assassination. And Walter Boert originally, what inspired him to write the book was discovery of deep-seated amnesia with a lot of the soldiers that came back from Vietnam. And he was always very sensitive to the whole idea of warfare as a whole. But what he really, really was concerned about was the battle over the mind. And we knew in 1990 that that's where the high ground was, and the end of the road. And we've reached that now. We knew in 1990 that free will, freedom of speech, and cognitive liberty would be the biggest issues on the planet. And this today is where we're at, because we are now in the process of merging our central nervous system to technology. And this is, we're in a very, very dangerous place for the whole human race at this point.
Well, besides the drugs used in the MKUltra program, I saw in an earlier interview that you had done, you talked about child abuse techniques also used. Can you expand on that for me?
When you have individuals in society that get off on having power over others as a mechanism of an effect of satisfaction to the psyche. Most of the time it's because they're disassociated from previous childhood that they experienced as a youngster. Whether it was sanctioned by the government or done through a program, these type of individuals come into power, and then what ends up happening is they have no empathy or even feeling for anything outside of themselves, because they've been fractured themselves. And everybody has heard the term, you know, those that have been abused abuse. And this is what we have today. And it was weaponized, MK Ultra and all the programs associated with it, MK Naomi and all the others, were utilized against the public to capture America and then the world.
Well, you just mentioned about mind control techniques transcending. And you've also said about the role technology plays in all of this, technology and media. Let's talk about this a little bit. What do you mean exactly?
Marshall McLuhan wrote Understanding Media. He spoke before the Bilderbergs and most powerful people in the world on the effects of technology on human perception. And this is a very important piece of the puzzle in understanding mind control, is being understand the what's known today as media ecology, which is the study of human perception and its marriage to technology. And we knew in the early 90s when they began to outer the inner, that's it called, of the central nervous system outside of the body via the computer, the media extension of our central nervous system, our handheld computers, that was the beginning of the end. And human perception would be altered forever because of that, all of which was planned by DARPA and the military industrial complex quite some time ago. So if people are trying to understand how this functions, they really need to study the works of Marshall McLuhan and other media theorists in the communications field, so they understand how human perception is altered through media environments, such as the television, the book, the computer, any media extension of the human psyche alters it. And they're aware of that. All the intelligence agencies were all told this in the 50s. They figured it all out, and they slowly utilized technology to alter and steer obsolescence and human perception and attention span, because now we're in an attention economy. And that's been offset by the amplification of our central nervous system to put us into an anticipation state all the time of receiving a text, receiving a message, receiving. And this is ADHD is an effect of the post-information environment and the computer, which we spoke about in Operation Mind Control.
I mean, if what you're saying is true in your perspective, what can be done to counter these measures?
It's incredibly damaging. I have kind of stayed away from a lot of the news, as I did a media fast by design, to unplug myself from everything. And that's what you need to do to have contrast and being able to survive in a post-information environment where everything now is inverted, information's moving at the speed of light, everything changes every second, human perception is being engineered and designed, and we've got the birth of the cybernetic being now, which is completely, totally different than what was previously there 5-10 years ago. We have different humans now. The days of the organic biological entity that we call a human being, it's gone. It's been re-engineered. Now it's being done genetically. So mind control now is not just taking over the mind, it's taking over the entire biology of an individual and re-engineering it for